the OTB Podcast Network. The OTB Sports app. Listen to OTB Sports Radio 24/7, plus all your favorite podcasts.
Do you not realize how crazy those things were?
The OTB Sports app. Available to download now from your app store.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
All right, the full-time score at the Aviva last night was Leinster 27, Munster 25. It was a brilliant game, a cracking return to rugby, and Johnny Murphy is on the line to look back at it. Johnny, how are you getting on?
Good on, how are you?
All good, all good. So as far as early season, pre-season matches go, that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was. I've been watching a good amount of the Premiership stuff over the last week or so since last weekend, and it was like a different sport really compared to what's going on in the Premiership over in England. So it was great to see. There was a huge amount of lot of intensity to it, and as you said already, it was practically the first pre-season game. So some errors here and there, but I think all in all it definitely
Yeah, that was the thing. It was almost as if the first few minutes went in a way where you're like, okay, we need to get used to this reality. That is, there's going to be a lot of errors. But it almost felt like once you got into the last hour of the game, after the first 20 minutes elapsed, they had immediately got up to speed. The error count seemed to drop. The unforced error count seemed to drop. And all of a sudden, you were into the swing of things. And as fatigue set in, it didn't actually tend to rise with the errors or anything like that, which was almost more impressive.
Yeah, exactly. I think the conditioning that the lads have gone through over the last 5-6 months, it definitely stood to them towards the end of the game. It was very much touch and go. Munster were pushing very, very hard towards the end, and Devin Toner comes up with an intercept, and they end up going down the far end of the pitch. So it was great to see. And as you said, you would expect those errors to multiply throughout the game, but it was the opposite.
The real shame is that we haven't got a full view of what Munster are going to be like at a fully stacked level, and unfortunately we might not get that for a little period of time, because RG Snyman, his injury doesn't look good whatsoever. Johan van Graan didn't make any secret of that afterwards. The irony here, the contradiction, was that, you know, it comes after a brilliant line-out take from Snyman, lands badly on his left leg, and it looks like that knee almost gave way on him. 7 minutes is not going to be enough to judge any player, Johnny, but it is that depth that is where Munster struggled in comparison with Leinster over the last few years. And with a player like John Klein on your bench rather than starting the team, the blunt reality is that makes Munster a stronger team. So that is a black mark against them, but I guess you have to say that the final scoreline and how tight it was and how well Munster finished at the end, the gap has narrowed a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I think with the injuries even before the game, with James Cronin dropping out, and then Dave Kilcoyne having to go off as well. You see Jeremy Loughlin come on and put in a really good stint. The scrum was something that was touch and go, and certainly didn't go backwards at any time. So you definitely feel that they are closing the gap. They were very comfortable in Leinster's 22. They held the ball for long periods. They put them under pressure, and that was where their tries came from. They did have to work harder than Leinster did for their points, but I think everyone who plays Leinster has to do that. It's kind of a blueprint for how you want to beat Leinster's defence, in the sense that you need to you need to hold the ball close quarters, try and tighten up their defence so they can't bring that line speed that they generate, and then try and pull the trigger at the right time, which they did very well last night. The strength and depth, and from what I was hearing from training, Snyman was really, when the contact started, he was really showing off his physicality early doors. So it was probably very frustrating not to be able to see that for a full 80 minutes and for a prolonged season and what we're heading into.
Yeah, it is a real shame. Just to pick up on what you said there about perhaps a blueprint to beat Leinster. There will never be a blueprint to beat this Leinster team because they're possibly the best team in the continent. But in terms of the best way forward, it does seem that if you get quick ball and move them around at a very quick pace constantly and get the ball out to the wide positions, it is the easiest way to hurt them. It's just about how you manage to do that, because that's a very easy thing to say in practice. At the same time, Munster managed to do that at times yesterday. They managed to get that ball a lot quicker than they have been doing in recent months before sport stopped.
I think there's a kind of a bit of both. It's good attack, and also generally how Leinster defend. They are usually very good at their decision making around the breakdown, which does allow teams to get quick ball, but because of their defensive style, it allows them to pull much more width and trying to bring repeated line speed against teams. Last night, and I probably think it was probably one of the areas that the referee probably wasn't as consistent as he was, but was, again, going back to the Premiership, was a lot better in that area, was the breakdown. There was a couple of times where he penalised Leinster for going off their feet, particularly in Munster's 22. Munster got away with a couple close, particularly when Keane Healy, a perfect example, was Keane Healy was penalised, but the Munster player came in and that causes a bit of... it does cause your decision making, just question your decision making, and does tighten their line defensively. But if you want to take Leinster on, you very much have to try and fight fire with fire, and it is all about the breakdown and managing the speed of the breakdown.
Munster seemed to be operating off a fairly high level in that department. CJ Sander was really good last night, obviously won a couple of big penalties. Do you still see a step forward for them in that area? Can they still do better at the breakdown, Munster? Because it is an impressive back row.
I think they're definitely going to, the new breakdown laws are really going to suit the Munster back row. You look at, the back row last night that started, every one of them have had periods at seven. CJ showed last night that he can really make that, that stand to his advantage. They've got the likes of Jack O'Donoghue and other guys to come in that area. So, it's something that they can really push forward with. I think they probably have to be a small bit more careful in the sense that... just their body positions going in and making sure that they're not going off their feet, particularly in the opposition 22. They got away with it last night, and they really made it pay dividends. So I think it's certainly something that they can really push forward with going forward.
Let's talk about Munster's midfield. Chris Farrell was man of the match. His power is something that is unquestionable at this point. He's such an incredible weapon to have in the backs. Is that as good a performance as you've seen him put in for Munster?
Yeah, I thought he was excellent last night. For Conway's try in the second half, taking a hard line like that, being able to plant his feet and pull the ball back just shows how good his passing game can be. And I think that's something with himself and Delande that they'll be able to expand and kind of layer on Chris Farrell's passing game, which not a lot of people give him credit for. He has a very good passing game, but because he's so physical and such a good ball carrier, he doesn't necessarily get to show it off as much. But I think with Delande now, it gives a really good balance where Chris can show off that skill that he has. But he was very impressive. And to be fair, Delande's first experience of a local derby like that, he really stood up to the plate. He was very much, in it. You could see by how physical he was. And a couple of turnovers and counter rooks that he created, he was, he had a very good showing for his first showing in such which can be a really intense battle.
It also seems that there is a good bit of dog about him, to say the very least, about Delande.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, you see himself and Johnny Sexton going at each other and that kind of stuff. I'd say, you know, all the Munster faithful were loving that, and an automatic crowd favourite straight away just because of that. But like, that's kind of what you want to see. And like, James Lowe was very much, you know, he was the exact same. Himself and Andrew Conway have had words throughout since he signed. And I think that probably, you know, they're the kind of people that you want to add into this, that melting pot. And it certainly bodes well for when they meet, when all likelihood looks like they're going to meet in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, because concerns have been raised that with transfers from Leinster to Munster, that you do dilute that interprovincial rivalry. Not on the evidence of last night.
No, I wouldn't say so at all. I think it's very much par for the course when you're in, and whichever environment you're in, it's the game that you look to of all. Even European Cup game, you look at, okay, when are we playing Leinster? You know, and it's the same for the Leinster. It's when we play Munster. Where's that fixture? And they're the fixtures that you want to be involved in.
How do you channel the DLN Day aggression into a mostly positive thing? Because, I mean, the hit on Sexton, you could argue, was a low blow. Liam Tolan in commentary last night said it was a low blow. A lot of Leinster fans won't disagree with that. Gives away a penalty, it leads to Leinster's try. That is not the sort of contribution that you want to see from your aggression. So how do you mould that into something that will lead to positive outcomes for Munster? Oh, can you hear me there, Johnny?
I have you there, yeah.
Sorry, I was just making the point about Diolande and his aggression. Can Munster make that a positive thing?
Yeah, I think so. Look, the shot on Johnny was probably, it wasn't borderline, but, you know, it was close enough. Yes, he did get penalised for it, but I think it's, you know, he's a World Cup winner. He's extremely experienced. And I think he'll be able to manage that himself. It's not something that that probably needs to be, you know, be pointed out. He'll know that costs them, and in the overall context of the game, it cost them quite a lot. So he'll be the first one to put his hand up and accept that and make sure that he manages that going forward.
I must ask you about Conor Murray. His box kicks last night caused Leinster a few issues. It seemed that with the ball in hand as well, he was as sharp as we've seen him at any point in this calendar year. You kind of always have to whisper it with regards to Conor Murray at the moment, because, you know, form is such a thing that we need a bit more time to look at. But the first sign was encouraging from the scrum half.
Yeah, I thought he was, you know, he was on it last night. Mm. His passing and his kicking was pinpoint. Munster got a lot of change in the aerial battle last night. They put Larmer under huge amount of pressure. I don't think Larmer caught one ball clean, and Munster won a lot of the scraps. And that was because of their accurate kicking game. I think when the speed of the game quickened up, Murray's passing was bang on, gave JJ a really good platform to push through. You see, JJ, in the first half, he gets a really good left foot step, makes a break, but his decision making was very good throughout the game. And I think the security of Connor inside him and with Farrell and Delandi outside him gives JJ the opportunity to, just to concentrate on running the game as he can, but also JJ has a fantastic running threat, and with that security either side of him, it gives him the opportunity, as you saw last night a couple of times, to really take the ball to the line and put some feet on people and make some good gain line.
And I think the way the game has been written about this morning in the papers is quite telling in terms of JJ Hanrahan's contribution. Sure, he missed a kick to level the game, to get a draw for Munster last night, but nobody's really talking about that because of the fact that he had a really good game outside of that. He didn't necessarily cost Munster despite that kick. He kind of had them in that position as well, and very quietly he had an excellent game at out half, controlling the tempo that Munster went about the game with.
Yeah, I think so. You know, that's probably where the kick for to draw the game is the toughest kick for a right hand, right foot kicker. So you allow him that. Everything else was bang on. But yeah, I think you know, JJ has a probably what looks like a sustained period of running the show. It comes at a pivotal time in his career. He's mid-20s. He has that experience. He's been away from home. He's experienced another environment. And, you know, I think last night was the first showing of his growth over the last couple of years, and probably you know, shows that it's only a step forward on where he I think he is going to get to, and this season is going to show exactly how important JJ is to the whole environment of Munster.
Let's talk about his opposite number, Johnny Sexton, a big snarling Ric Flair woo at one point when he won one penalty in front of his own posts. He obviously was bringing this level of energy that might have come from D'Alande winding him up a bit throughout the match. But like this snarling, this angry Johnny Sexton is exactly the sort of character you want to see on the pitch.
Yeah, I thought Johnny was brilliant last night. He's, you know, obviously those photos on social media going around of after his gym work and that kind of stuff. He's certainly in great condition, and he showed that last night. You know, I think for you know, James Lowe's try to, you know, to automatically click in after they get the scrum penalty, play the ball to Witt, and then come around the corner and to pump like that to fish out, you know, to fish out Andrew Conway, and then that delicate little pass in behind the back. That is world class. They were pumping in the crowd noise. I wasn't sure whether it was going to be last night, but I was quite disappointed that I wasn't able to hear the actual noise from the pitch. Mm. I think that energy, you just get to see what and hear the energy that different players bring, and it was very clear that Johnny was bringing probably the most energy on the pitch last night. And you know, there's talk of him playing on past his current contract, and on last night showing you wouldn't question that at all. Top of the game, and again, it's his first game in 5 or 6 months. He's only going to get better, and that's pivotal to Leinster, and more importantly, Ireland going forward.
Eason Asewa was saying that he could play all the way to 42. Do you see that happening?
I'm not sure. It depends on his condition, but his condition last night, after the preseason I was put in, I wouldn't back against that, knowing Johnny and we're similar enough age. He was in college a couple of years behind me, and I would have played him a lot of my club rugby in the early days against Johnny. I certainly wouldn't back, knowing him from then, I certainly wouldn't back against him now.
The sound thing is interesting. Ryle mentioned it earlier on in the pay-per-view. You mentioned it there as well. Like, even with the fake crowd noise being pumped in on the TV last night, you could still appreciate that what we hear on a weekly basis in regular times just isn't an accurate representation of what's actually going on the pitch. Like, how noisy is it down there? How much is it just a screaming battle at times?
You find that a lot of people... you know, probably the best, the thing is that, you know, to be a professional sports person, you have to be really good at communicating, and you have to communicate consistently throughout the game. So there's a, you know, it's kind of a myth that, you know, when you watch a game, you know, no one's talking, no one's speaking to the referee, but it's constant communication. You have lads shouting at each other to get up off the ground quicker, to fill spots. It is very much 30 people, talking and in spots probably not as pleasant as people would like to think, but it is very much a constant level of chat, and that's what comes with organization in systems. In terms of defense is all about communication. The most important thing is how you talk to each other. I've known guys that have been possibly not the best tacklers in the world, to say the least, but could be the best defenders because they can communicate extremely well inside and out, and they can spook people out of running at them because the person with the ball thinks that they're going to get hit when they come towards them. So I'd love to hear that. And you can see it if you ever go to sessions you hear a certain level of noise, but during game day when you're pumped up, it's even higher. Now a lot of it wouldn't be fit pre watershed, but it would be great to hear. Certainly from a coaching perspective, I'd love to be able to sit behind the post and just listen.
Yeah, as a coach, are you encouraging teammates to just keep shouting at each other? Like, I mean, is there an encouragement to kind of shout at the opposition as well? Like, I mean, as you mentioned there, if somebody's running at you, there's almost a distraction element to things. Like, I'm not talking about like trash talking or anything here. I'm just talking about the sound distraction.
Yeah, I think so. You know, a lot of, you know, some defensive systems would be built on, first thing would be a wall of sound and then a wall of bodies, and then you go into the contact zone. So I think to be able to communicate, and even stuff, very simple stuff like, you know, I have, you know, and everyone knows each other's name. So that's, you know, it's very easy to call someone by name and say you have them in the defensive line, or you know where the ball is. And it's part of your accountability as well. So if you don't hear the person inside you, you can't then either bring line speed, or you can't even drift, you can't make a decision. So it's really important from an accountability perspective that everyone is talking. Now it can't be white noise. It has to be clear. And it has to be correct communication, but it is something that is vitally important. And in attack as well, you'd hear kind of TVs are so good because they're built on kind of the second 5-8 process of how they play, and that gives you a second talk, or a set of hands, and a second receiver to play off.
Right, that's very interesting. So the communication is obviously something that's been heralded quite a bit by coaching. Like, so this is what we need to do. We need to ensure that there's another television channel for the next game, and take off the crowd noise so we can get a greater appreciation of this. And maybe the stuff that gets picked up on the ref mic could perhaps only go post-watershed, but it could be an idea for next week. Just one other thing on Leinster's backs that I just wanted to ask you about is just the midfield partnership, obviously, of Ringrose and Henshaw, which I guess some people would think is Ireland's partnership at midfield at this moment. Chris Farrell will have something to say about that, so will Bundiaki. But how did their cohesion look last night in your view?
Yeah, it looked very good. I think for Ringrose's try, Robbie shows off what a good footballer he is in that situation, and that's what we come back to. That's communication and seeing what's in front of you to be able to call for that and put the ball in that position. I think Gary Ringrose was exceptional last night. He comes back against the grain for that break, and that's something he does really well. He comes back on those switches, runs where the ruck is. He's got such good feet, close quarters, and then he's into open space. I think they've got a really good dynamic between them, and the fact that they're training with each other every day, it really does. You know, I think it is probably the best partnership that Ireland have, and they can be very physical too. And I think in the 13 channel, you know, he showed a clean pair of heels last night. Delandy did get him, but he put in a really nice chip kick, and that put so much pressure on Munster in their own 22. So, of all, I thought Gary Ringrose was very, very impressive. I suppose it was a game where both 13s felt that they were up against their opposite number for an Ireland spot, you know, under Andy Farrell. So it's no surprise that both of them played so well.
The second game of the weekend is this afternoon. It's Connacht against Ulster at 4:30. A couple of interesting points, especially on the Ulster side of things here, Johnny. Jacob Stockdale, a fullback, first of all, it's something we've seen before. It's not new news, but it is something that is gaining a bit of momentum now, where everybody at Ulster is starting to realise that potentially the biggest potential for Jacob Stockdale to cause havoc to the opposition is actually with that 15 jersey on his back.
Yeah, well, I think certainly defensively, it allows him to, in their defensive system, allows him to stay in the backfield and control and get the ball when teams are kicking it out, particularly on exits. Also, it gives you a nice balance. We've seen it for years with Ireland, and you saw it last night with James Lowe. Having that left foot in the backfield gives you so much more options of how you exit and where you can exit, particularly on your run kicks down the left-hand side, which can be very difficult for right-footed kickers to technically do, because you have to square up into the ball under pressure and then make sure you're in a straight line, where when you have your left-footed kicker, he can just drop it on his foot and down he goes. And then when you're running a run kick on the other side, you can just swap him into 13 or push him out to the wing and get a right-footer to do it. So it just gives you so much more options. But I think particularly it takes his... what will be one of his weaknesses, I would see, would be his backfield cover. With the defensive systems, majority of the defensive systems at the moment are 13-2, so with 13 guys in the front line and two guys in the backfield, having him as a designated person in the backfield allows him to kind of cover half the pitch and stick to that, rather than having to be up and down, which can sometimes happens in your pendulum. And as we saw against England this year, he has the potential to get lost. And I think at 15 in certain defensive systems, it just allows you to, to have a bit more structure to your backfield cover and not worry about who's in behind you. Do I have to go forward? Do I have to go back? You know that you're consistent in the backfield and that you're essentially the last line of defense. You have last man when they do go over the top if you're bringing a lot of line speed.
Right, that's very interesting. So is there something that Andy Farrell can look at in terms of that defensive system at Ulster, or are they the same defensive systems anyway?
The majority of the Irish provinces, systems are 13-2. They've kind of expanded. It's a rugby league style. Andy Farrell has it at Ireland. And the majority of the four provinces use it, or use a style or a version of it. They have, in certain areas, they might have, might be 12-1-2 for someone in the chip space with a 9 in behind, but generally it would be a 13-2 system.
Right, so this is obviously something that we should be keeping a real eye on today and into the future then. It's not Stockdale locked down one wing for Ireland anymore. It is a very fluid thing. Where is it Larmour, Conway, Earls? Who is going to be the wing beside Stockdale potentially? This is a real possibility.
Yeah, it would be. Generally those the two guys would be designated pre-game and they'd stay in those positions. They can change from game to game. I personally think with James Lowe's availability, I think the back three for Ireland could be, I personally think Andrew Conway is electric on the wing, but he's an incredible 15 as well. And for someone that's not particularly the tallest, he bosses the air. Yeah. And last night, Jordan Larmour probably got found out in that area, where if Andrew Conway was in those positions, I'd say he'd probably collect 90% of that ball in the air. So it could be a case where Lowe's on one wing, Keith Earls on the other, and maybe Andrew at 15. But I certainly wouldn't discount Jacob Stockdale or Jordan Larmour.
And very interesting. Johnny Murphy, great stuff as always. Thanks for a million for taking the call.
Cheers, thanks, Owen.
Johnny Murphy there, reviewing last night's rugby and looking ahead to today's fixture. We are taking a break for news. Our Celtic Legends panel is coming up next.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.